My name is Irene Kurka, and I'm welcoming you to this podcast that is called Neue Musik Leben. This is a German podcast, but once in a while, or now even more often, I present some episodes in English. I'm a soprano, I have studied classical singing, but then I really got into contemporary music and now I sing lots of contemporary music. If you would like to meet up with me, please look at my website www.irenekurka.de. I will also put this in the show notes. This podcast is all about themes all around contemporary and experimental music. I share with you behind the scenes, insider knowledge, and I really show you the human beings in the new music world. I'm cooperating with the NMZ Neue Musik Zeitung, which is a great music paper in Germany. Now let's get started with the interview today. My interview guest is Eva Maria Huben, who is a composer, a pianist, an organist. She's an excellent writer and author, and she also is a professor at the university in Dortmund. And she recently has published her new book, Musical Practice as a Form of Life. And we will talk about this as well. Now let's get started with the interview with Eva Maria Huben. Hello, Eva Maria Huben. I'm sitting here with you in Düsseldorf and I welcome you to my podcast interview.
Thank you very much, dear Irene. I'm very glad to speak here and I'm looking forward to a great talk.
Okay, let's start. How did you find your way into new and experimental music?
I think I could find a path into new music really late in my life, when I met students and was teacher myself. My studies at the Folkwang University in Essen was very clear and very comfortable for me and brought many new ideas, and I had contact with new music, but the contemporaneous music that is really new, I did not meet during my studies as a student. But when I had the chance to teach students, then I met contemporary music. And later, when I met Antoine Beuger, I could gain a new approach again to new music.
And when did you start to compose?
Yes, this was the year in 2000 when I met Antoine Beuger. In this year, I began to compose. And I came to him as a musicologist and during musical researches. And I was very interested in silence in music. And then we talked and then I found a way that we could gain a wonderful relationship and then a friendship. And then in the course of this encounters with other composers there, I began to compose myself.
So you started fairly late?
Yes, I started okay. Very late. But I had a few compositions before. The start was definitely very, very early. But I do not count them as opera for my work. They are not in my list of compositions.
So were there many, or was it just like, I don't know, one piece a year or so in the early stages?
Yes, or okay. Two pieces a year, and not so many pieces. Yeah. But when I started with Wandelweiser, I had perhaps 30 pieces before. Yes.
Cool. And now you're really active, busy, yes. And many, many pieces, many great pieces. You're also playing the organ and you're also playing piano.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, it were my main subjects during my studies of music. And I had this as main. And then I had chant. All pupils and students had to have lessons in singing. And I could not really estimate it, but I did what I had to do. And now my great love has is succeeding, and I gain more and more love to chant.
Yes,
and I began five years ago. I deepened and I took my studies again, and I have a nice teacher in chant. And now I love it very Great. Much.
What represents good new music for you?
Good new music, you speak about a term of quality, and this is very important, I think, to gain own opinions, to gain own marks of quality. How can you recognize a piece? And for me, it's only for me, I think it's subjective, but for me, a piece gains quality if it trusts in performers.
Mm-hmm.
If it trusts in their activities and their love to the piece. So a piece of high quality does not say you mustn't do this, you mustn't do this, you mustn't do this, but it opens a wide range of possibilities so that every performance can differ from another performance. And nevertheless, the identity of the piece is kept. And this is, for me, a paradox.
Mm-hmm.
The piece gains and has its identity, but the real performance is always another one, in another space, at another time. And so this is, for me, quality.
Great. But you're also talking about a very important subject. I think that you there must be a point where you have to let go of your piece, I think, because some composers, they yes. hold on too much, and
no.
sometimes they even, I find, they put the pressure then on the
yeah.
on
no.
the
when I give
performers,
them,
and
yes.
then you might not get into that heavenly state
no.
that
no.
it's just yeah happening and be the individual performance
yeah.
of the particular performer.
Yes, I only can compose in a state of full relaxed trust in life and trust in love and trust in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a state of my mind. I could say it is a bit affirmation, but not in a bad sense.
Mm-hmm.
The word is perhaps a bit weakened in the last century, but affirmation is for me a great yes to life. And it carries with it hope and looking into the future. And this is what I want to say in my compositions. And I trust the performers, and I do not say what they do not have to do. So when a score went away and the score is published, I retire. I fully retire. And do not put my finger on single places and say this must be in this way and this. They can do what they want.
How is it then for yourself? I mean, I know that you also perform your own music. Do you feel them your own freedom, or how do you treat
yes,
your own music?
If I perform a known organ piece, I perform in different churches, different pieces, but it's the same identity of the composition. But I must listen to the space, I must listen to the organ, to the specific register and colors, and I can't act like a machine doing the same at different places. It's impossible for me.
And do you have the feeling, is there a difference for you performing your own pieces and pieces by other composers?
Sometimes. Sometimes, yes. Sometimes I prefer that another individual makes the interpretation of a piece of mine. Mm-hmm. Sometimes. For if I perform Messiaen, I cannot ask him mm-hmm. Now. And I'm sure I can do what I know what I must do. Mm-hmm. That's a kind of security. But I don't really think if I like it as much as I like performing a piece with great freedom. But sometimes I prefer that the first performance is done by another mm-hmm. performer. There's more distance.
Okay.
And more strangeness.
Mm-hmm.
And awe and wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And there is the energy between two people. I'm, as a composer, give it away, and the performer takes it, and there is a way between two people. And I like this.
Great.
Because the piece is gains a new quality mm-hmm. by this.
Okay. You already mentioned Antoine Beuger, and you both are part of the Wandelweiser. How would you describe what Wandelweiser is? And please also tell us how you became part of Wandelweiser.
Yeah, I became part of Wandelweiser since the first meeting with Antoine Beuger. I telephoned and said, oh, I want to know something about silence. Would you please have a talk with me? And Antoine said, yes, I would like. And then I came and we were very distant people and did not know each other. And then during the talk, we knew more and more that we had same ideas and that we could meet very freely and talk about many subjects. And so when I left him, the first step on the path to friendship was done. And then I began to become Wandelweiser. And that was a very important day for me. And what is Wandelweiser? I could say that all composers belonging to Wandelweiser do not really know what Wandelweiser is.
That's cool.
Yeah, and perhaps this doubts and not knowing anything is a great link between us. We feel that there is a community referring to silence, to meditating, but meditation is not the right word, mm-hmm. I think. Perhaps more silence and being very present in this moment of listening.
Mm-hmm.
Listening is a very, very good word to describe what they want. They want to invite people to listen, to be here and fully accept their existence in this moment. Perhaps this is a link between them all without defining what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you cannot listen to Wandelweiser music at the same time when you fully concentrate on a book and want to read. It's not a music for the background, and it's a music that can fill a room and you are absent, but you cannot do other activities and like reading or... No, I cannot. Mm-hmm. I can sit in the garden and have some sounds of Wandelweise in the background, but I cannot concentrate on other things.
I know that you also have been composing a lot for the human voice, and I have been very lucky that I was able to sing a lot of your great music for solo voice, voice with piano, voice with organ. We also did an opera, we did an orchestra piece together. And how is it for you composing for the human voice? What is special or challenging about it?
Yeah. When I began to sing again 5 years ago, I think my way to compose changed again because I have a new approach to the voice. Since last Sunday, I can really speak about it. Because I was in a concert Antoine did with his choir Super Tets.
Oh, you went there? That's great.
I was there. And it was clear for me afterwards, I could not speak. I could not go into a restaurant and talk. I must drive home and nothing. Because I had way into silence afterwards, and I had to think about it because I fully recognized what made the fascination of the voice for me. Before, I only felt it.
Okay, and what is the recognition?
The recognition that the voice reveals the full vulnerability.
Yeah, vulnerability.
And fragility.
Yes.
Of human being.
Yeah.
And there was one one composition of mine, My Sweet Love, Oh My Sweet Love, that seems to be a full affirmation, but is a full affirmation. And golden sun and ocean white and all this. And then there is the chant Marianne Schuppe composed, O Mensch, zart bedenkt der Blumenart. In English, perhaps, oh, man, tender and fragile, think of what flowers are. Think about the flowers, about their existence. And the flower is very fragile, and the flower is blown away with the wind, but the flower is very beautiful, and the flower can break. And so the voice shows us our fragility and our encounter with death and with decay, but this is our great chance to be a human being in this decay and going to death, because there is change and there is hope, and we look into future with this, if we fully accept this fragility. And now I'm very clear about this, and I'm very deeply touched by a voice that shows this fragility. And there are some singers of songs, Klavierlieder, who try to cover this. They sing like strong man and never loses themselves, nothing happens and all is sure. But this does not touch me. But if a voice really can let happen the deep fragility and dares to show this, I am really touched, because it's a truth of our existence. A truth of our existence can be revealed.
I can totally understand you. I want to tell a story. When I did my first recording with Wandelweiser, which was a piece by Antoine, and it was a piece with Jörg and me, Jörg Frey, and we did the recording, and I basically had long notes, and they also were repeated, and then I got the tape, the recording, to listen to it, and I've never heard myself in such a way, because usually you know, there are other instruments or there is some rhythm or some text, and there are certain things of the voice you don't hear in other music, how it is composed. So for the first time, I heard my voice in a very pure sense. You could hear how the voice started, if it starts directly or with maybe a little crack or something, how the note developed and how I would go out. Yeah. And I would, for the first time, hear those things, and I would at first thought, oh my God, this is so imperfect.
Yeah.
I was shocked, and I thought I could never release such a thing. So I called up Antoine and I was like, this is not going out. I can't do this. And then he told me, well, this is the process that most people go through when they work with us. It's normal. I can totally relate to you. I had that too when I, you know, started doing things with the flute. And he says, no, it's so beautiful and it's so human and it's so fragile and it's so honest. Please leave it like that. And it really took me a lot of courage at that time in my life. And I was so amazed that this recording, for many people, it really was a statement, and it opened many doors for me that I was so brave. And I mean, now I'm more used to it when I now listen to other recordings I've done for Wandelweiser, but I can totally relate to you because it was... yeah, so shocking for me back then. And now I also enjoy those little parts that voices have, or, you know, when the sound of a piano is decaying. I mean, there's so much happening, and I can really now listen to those things, and I find it very beautiful and honest. No?
Yeah, that's it.
So now we want to talk about your book, which has come out last year in German. And this year it comes out in the English version, which I'm very happy. The title is Musical Practice is a Form of Life. And what is it about, and what is the core message of this book?
The core message can be described with words we used before. It speaks about the trust in the performers, and the performers are the main subjects in the composing idea. It's not the composer who has all might to say this and this not, but the score is a script that opens a wide space of possibilities. And that's the idea. And I do not refer to contemporary music only, but I include music of all epochs and composers of former times as well, such as Schubert, Beethoven, as well as Cage and Jörg Frey, Antoine, as well as Johann Jakob Froberger, Orbach. So it's a wide range of composers, and I try to teach the reader a bit to listen to the uncertainty of traditional music that is not so certain and defined, but opens as well a wide space for the performers, not only the new music.
So that is very interesting, and that's the common thread throughout the book?
Yes, that's a common idea. In the first part, I give the theoretical background, and the second part talks about examples as keys, that means that touching the keys of a cembalo or organ or harpsichord organ or piano. And then I have the focus on solo, duo, trio, quartet, and many. So the performance creates different situations. A solo is another situation than to be in twos. And so this is observed And then I try to describe the situation and what they are doing. And the focus is the activity of the performers, what they are doing now in this situation. And the first part gives a theoretical background. I ask, is it right to say, oh, it's only music, it's not reality. I can nearly die and fall down and have a terrible situation, and it's only music. So I try to ask, is it only music? And the idea was to find a philosopher or another author who could provide me with a kind of vocabulary to describe this. And I found Alfred Schütz, who says, basing on William James, I can say that there are many realities and we find real what has to do with us and with our lives. And the dream and the musical situation or the religion area are realities as our common reality, as our paramount reality or the everyday life reality. But there are other realities. We pass a short threshold and then we are in the other reality. But they are real as well. And that helped a lot.
I know when you're going to a concert, I mean, there is always something happening with you, even if you like it or you don't like it, or you're angry about it or you're happy about it, or it makes you calm or whatever. I mean, you cannot leave a concert that anything has happened with you.
No. And so it has consequences for your life, perhaps. Perhaps not, perhaps yes. And you have the threshold. You go into the concert, to the wardrobe, give away your coat, perhaps, and then you are in the other world. And afterwards you go in the everyday life world again. But perhaps something has happened and you are another one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the words are influence each other and the words are linked.
I think everybody should read this book. I will put all the information in the show notes. And now I want to know, because I know you're composing, you're a musician yourself, you're teaching, you're writing, as we just talked about. How do you manage your day? How do you get all those things done? And do you have any daily rituals? Is there any advice you can give us?
Perhaps I'm working on different levels as a composer, then as an author, as a teacher, and as organist or pianist. And you can't do this every day, all these activities, one after one. You would get mad.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I say I'm composing all the time and I do not stop composing, it means that ideas are in your brain, in your mind, and when you are performing or studying a new work, in your mind the voice with the composition goes on. And so I could compare different activities with a polyphone work. And sometimes the main voice comes, it's what you are just doing, and the other voices go a bit into the background, and then another voice comes forth, like a score of Schönberg. He often notated main voice in the score,
mm-hmm.
coming forward and going away. So everything is always there, but not everything is actualized.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this has nothing to do with multitasking. Because multitasking means you try to look in your emails and in the same time you want to follow a recording. But I'm sure
you're not so much into multitasking.
No, that is multitasking. But this has nothing to do with it. Because you concentrate on one and the other lines can be influenced and perhaps even...
Right, promoted. There's always running something in your background, yes, of your brain, and putting things together or seeing, this might fit together too.
And perhaps a second view, I learned this about the voice by training my voice and by studying again with a wonderful teacher. There are days I recognize that my voice is bad and, I can't. It's the same we talked about a few minutes before. I can't stand my voice. It's so ugly. It's so ugly. And then to accept this ugliness. It is as it is now. And now I try and try to relax a bit and listen to it. And I'm humming and feeling the vibrations. Perhaps this is enough for this day. Perhaps this is enough. And about this honesty and, it's a kind of accepting the status quo and not try always to reach the optimum
mm-hmm.
or the best.
Mm-hmm.
Only try, and if this is all you can do now, it's okay.
Yeah. What are you thankful for today?
Today or is it...
You can answer it however you want to answer it.
Thankful. I'm thankful for the wonderful people I could meet in the last years and in my life. And I'm thankful for my parents I could enjoy. They did many things for me. And I'm thankful for my husband and for my colleagues and students and for my friends. That's the first. Also, I'm thankful for the relationships because nobody can do anything without surroundings and connections with other people. This is why I'm very thankful, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And not to forget my teachers and my pupils and students. There were wonderful circles of encounters and feedbacks, and which gave new views, opened new perspectives and new sides on life. Yes, and last not least, I'm thankful that I'm here and that if I go, there's a cemetery nearby where my teacher for chant lives. And when I'm a quarter hour earlier than I must go and do not want to disturb the other lesson, I have a short walk on the cemetery. And I often see people who died at the age of 20 or 35 and even 2 years or mm-hmm. 2 months. I think it's not certain that you are still living at your age. You could have died 50 years before.
Mm-hmm.
And so every new year is a new present. And if we are 80 or 90, we can think in the same way. Every year is a new gift for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thankful for this.
What does it mean for you to be true to yourself or authentic in the music business, and how do you keep true to yourself?
This question touches the questions we have discussed before. And I think I'm true to myself if I do not try cover my lacks
mm-hmm.
and to cover my roughness of voice. And if I try and to dare trust and fragility, then I'm authentic. I'm not the big woman and the great teacher who knows everything and who can do everything and who is always powerful, cannot be hurt. Oh no, I can be fall in violence, I can fall in tears, and then I am true to myself, I think.
What does success mean for you?
Success means joy in the present. I am not composing for a name in a data list.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not composing that everyone will speak in 100 years about Ephemaya Hume. That's not my aim. I do not know what there will be in the future, and that is not success. Success is my joy to make a new piece now. And I'm composing now, and this activity and work on the new piece is success for me. And it can be new every day. It can be new. This is success to have ideas and to realize them without knowing what will happen to the piece.
And there you let go again.
Yes. And that's the way, because I never change old pieces. They are done. And if performers think they are worth to be done again, they shall do. But I do not like to work on past pieces. Not because I'm not estimating them. No, I estimate them. They are in my list. But I prefer to work on new ones. And this is the success, to step forward piece by piece and to do your work. That's what Cage said. I'm only doing my work. And I can fully understand what he means.
What drives you forward? Do you have a vision?
Yes. I have a vision. The last piece, or the piece I'm composing now, has a text for the performers and how to perform. And the text is not, you must do this, you must do this, but it is a poetic text. And it describes my vision. It says, I had a dream. And I know this, perhaps said Martin Luther King. But okay, it's a quotation. I had a dream. And then I tell, and I'm still dreaming, that we are all saints in the heaven on earth, full of awe, full of wonder, full of friendship, and full of love. And then follows a quotation I learned in the concert Antoine gave with Super Dads on last Sunday, a quotation of Yoko Ono, a dream, we dream alone, remains a dream. But a dream we dream together is reality. And then the last sentence is the sax. It's a piece for saxophone solo. The sax becomes a voice. And so that's my vision.
Great.
It's formulated in this last piece, Dreaming Legions.
I love that. We arrived at the last question. Maybe you even can top it now. We already got so much precious information and impulses from you. Which tip would you like to give young artists?
I would tell them that it is important to be true to oneself and not to do things that run against the own personality and against their own opinions and ideas, and not to give away the trust in other people and friends and performers. Trust is the way that we keep together and that we keep in touch about the things we must do. And without trust, we cannot reach anything in the world. In this trust, young people who are now going on the streets and cry their feelings about the climate, and the old people who say the same, the generations come together and they encounter and they can say only this on the basics of trust. That I would say. And on this grounds, you can be creative and you can do things and can compose and can, if you have this, not this ground, you cannot do anything.
Well, thank you so much. I'm very moved and thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you, Irene. I was very happy to talk to you.
So this was the interview with Eva Maria Huben. I hope there was lots of inspiration in it for you. And I'm looking forward to hearing from you. You can write me through email, through Facebook. I really love to be connected with you. Thank you that you tuned in with me today. And I really hope that you liked it and it inspired you. And I would be so happy if you would share this podcast or even this special episode today with your friends and colleagues. Thank you. I wish you all the best. Live your music, live your life, and see you next time. Yours, Irene.